Morning, friends. Happy Sabbath, and welcome again to any who may be visiting us here at Granite Bay. We're very glad that you're here. We encourage you to continue to pray for the program and the plans for renovating the existing building that we have right now. You know, we see people sitting out in the foyer, and obviously, the Lord's blessing, we need some more room. And that'll be wonderful to have a place we don't have to set up and take down for ourselves every week. But we're glad that you're here today. Pray for God's presence. Our message this morning is taken from a short book in the Old Testament that has a lot of meaning. You find it directly after the book of Judges, because it actually falls during the time of Judges. It's called the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth. Now, the title for the sermon is Ruth, Reaping, Redemption, and Rest. Because these are some of the principal themes in this very important Old Testament book. You know, when you begin the New Testament, don't go there right now, but when you start the New Testament, you look at the genealogies of Jesus, it is principally tracking the genealogy of Jesus through the fathers, with four exceptions. There are four women that are mentioned in the genealogy of Jesus. How many of you remember what they are? Well, Ruth, Rahab, Tamar, infamous Bathsheba. Now, one reason it's speculated that those four names are mentioned, of course, the stories that connect with those four names are also found in the Bible, but we're not sure about Bathsheba. We know that Rahab and Ruth and Tamar were not Jews. And so it's reminding us that even in the Old Testament that the Messiah would have Gentile blood in his veins. Bathsheba, the jury's out about whether or not she was a Jew. We're not sure. But that may be part of the reason, but they factor into the story. But Ruth has come to mean, when you say a person, well, Pastor Ross is married to a Ruth, and my mom's name was Ruth. And when Pastor Ross and I are on the road together, you know, I tell him I'm a bachelor and you're ruthless doing meetings. But when you say a person is ruthless, it means they are without compassion, because the word Ruth has come to mean somebody that is compassionate, because that's a character in the Bible. But that's not what her name meant back then. Her name changed with her character over time. The name Ruth simply means female companion or satiation. Someone who satisfies. And you find the story, you may want to turn there with me, in, of course, Book of Ruth. There are only four chapters. You pray for me. I'm going to try to get through all four, because it's a short love story, but there's a lot of great information there. Why don't we go ahead and start with the first verse. Ruth 1. Now it came to pass in the days of the judges when they ruled. By the way, the book of Ruth, if you're going to place it in Judges, near as we can tell, it falls sometime during the time of Gideon. It overlaps the life of Eli. And we know that at the conclusion of Ruth, they give birth to a boy named Obed, who gives birth to a boy named Jesse, who gives birth to David. And that comes during the time of Samuel. So you back it up. And the story of Boaz and Ruth probably lands sometime during the time of Gideon. And there's a certain man of Bethlehem, Judea. Now, there's two Bethlehems. Bethlehem means house of bread. There was one Bethlehem that was in the Galilee area, and there was another Bethlehem that was known as Bethlehem Ephrathah. And that's the one that's just by Jerusalem where David lived. And this is the one they're talking about here in the country of Judea. And he went to sojourn in the country of Moab because of this famine that was in the land. Now, they're wondering if the famine was not so much a famine because of bad weather as bad neighbors. You remember during the time of Gideon that it said that the Midianites came and they raided the country whenever there was a harvest. They took all the sustenance of the people. And so during the time when they were being oppressed by the Midianites, could be the famine that drove this man Elimelech and his family from Bethlehem. And they went to sojourn in the country of Moab, his wife and his two sons. And the man's name was Elimelech, the name of his wife was Naomi, And the names of his two sons were Malion and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judea. And they went to the country of Moab, and they remained there. So they were there for some years. And in the process of time, Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. Now they took wives of the women of Moab, and the name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. Then both Malion and Chilion died, and so the women survived by her two sons and her husband. So now you see Ruth is left destitute. I just thought it'd be good to say for a minute, you've heard the name Melchizedek. Elimelech is a little bit like that, and it's got that ek sound in it, and that means king. His name means my God is king. But you know what his son's name mean? Malion and Chilion, that means sickly and pining. You would worry about the health of boys that you named sickly and pining. I hope nobody here will do that to their kids. Orpah means a girl with a full mane. And Naomi means pleasantness. So names mean something in the Bible. It's a little later, you're going to encounter someone in the story by the name of Boaz. That means strength. And so it's quite a transition to go from a husband named sickly and pining to one named strength. So even in the stories, in the names, you can see sort of what's happening in the story. But going back here to Ruth, and I'm not going to read every verse in the story because we're not going to have time for that. Then she, Naomi, arose with her daughters-in-law that she might return to the country of Moab. For she heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had visited his people by giving them bread. Now, she's going back to Bethlehem. What does Bethlehem mean? House of bread. Where was Jesus born? House of bread. Where'd they place Jesus, the bread of life, when he was born? They placed him in a manger. What goes in a manger? Grain. So, Jesus, the bread of life, was born in the house of bread and placed in a bread basket. So, or place where you put grain anyway. So this all transpires in the context of the land of Bethlehem. Verse 7, she went out from the place where she was, she and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return to the land of Judah. And Naomi, she stopped along the way, maybe under a shade tree, and she said to her two daughters, "Go, return each of you to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant to you that you might find rest." If you underline in your Bible, you might make a note of that because it comes up a couple of times. Grant that you might find rest. Well, here they had no family, no husband, no children. And part of finding rest was finding family. And in Bible times, if you did not have a man in the house to watch over you, then you could not take care of. There's no social security. And you also may not have had your farm. She lost everything when they left. It was taken over by others that took her property, so she has nothing to go back to. It's also common in Bible times when somebody was beginning their journey, you'd walk with them part of the way. You remember when Abraham was visited by the Lord and the messengers that he saw them on their way. You'd awful, you know, you didn't just want to say goodbye. Karen's been trying to teach me that when we have visitors at the house and they get ready to leave, you get up and you walk them to the door and then you stand in the door like the farmer and his wife and you kind of wave at them and hold your pitchfork and you see them off, you know. Now, you remember that picture of the farmer and his wife with the pitchfork standing there. That's what I'm talking about, not the pitchfork. That didn't make any sense. Anyway, but you're supposed to see them to the door and see them off, and you wave goodbye. And so I'm doing better. And you know families like this, whenever you leave, they stand in the door until they can't see anymore, and they kind of wave as you go. And that's polite. That's supposed to be good manners. Otherwise, you're acting like you're in a hurry to see them go when they say, "Well, it's time for us to go." And if they don't say that soon enough, then what you do is you say, "Shall we have prayer together before you leave?" Karen and I were visiting George and Nellie Vandeman years ago, and I don't remember how it came up, but Karen maybe asked Nellie, she said, "You have a lot of visitors." We were visiting them, and she said, "Do some of them stay too long?" She said, "Oh, yes." And she said, well, George has just got a very graceful way of saying, shall we pray together before you leave? So the daughters are showing her on the way, but one of them really wasn't intending to go all the way. And she realizes that they've gone far enough to show their love and how they regret her leaving. She says, go return home, and the Lord grant that you might find rest. And they said to her, no, surely we'll return with you to your people. But Naomi says, turn back, my daughters. Why will you go with me? Are there still sons in my womb that they may be your husbands? Now, you know, in the Bible, there was a law that if a man died, that it was the responsibility of the brother of that man to then raise up seed to his brother in his name that would carry on his land. It was that important that they had men in the house to help protect them and to help them survive. And she said, look, I'm not going to have a husband. I'm not pregnant. I have no sons in my womb. And even if I should get married, are you really going to wait around until he's old enough to marry? Of course, it'd be a pretty big gap there, wouldn't it, there? You know, 18, 20 years. And she said, even if I should have hope and should have a son tonight and bear sons, would you wait for them until they were grown? Would you restrain yourselves from having husbands? No, my daughters, that's unreasonable. She's saying, it grieves me for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. And so they lifted up their voices and they wept again. And Orpah kissed, I always want to say Oprah. Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clung to her. And so as Orpah is going up the road, Naomi points and says, look, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Now, you know what that means? When they married into Naomi's family, they had turned from their gods to Jehovah. Because here, Orpah was going back to her gods. She's turning to go back to her people and to her gods. Return after your sister-in-law. And here Ruth says in these very famous words, and this is Ruth 1:16. Entreat me not to leave you or to turn back from following after you. For wherever you go, I will go. And wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. And the Lord do so to me and more also if anything but death parts you and me. Now, that's one of the most beautiful statements of loyalty and commitment that you're going to find in the Bible. And I've often thought, if that could be our prayer about our relationship with Jesus, we'd have a very powerful church. Think about it. Wherever you go, I will go. I'm going to follow you. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people, the church, are my people. Your Father in heaven, my Father. Where you die, doesn't the Bible say we are crucified and buried with Christ? I will die, and there will I be buried. And then it closes with an oath. The Lord do so to me and more also. If anything but death parts you and me. Also a good statement for a wedding. Till death do us part. I've read this at several weddings before as well. Now, before I go any farther, let me tell you that I think there's much more to the book of Ruth. The book of Ruth is really here, even though it comes in the middle of Judges. The book of Ruth, you know, it appears in the Bible following the book of Judges, because the book of Ruth introduces the line of the Messiah through David. It tells how the house of David is formed, but it's really in the context of a love story. But something else has happened. Naomi, the book begins really with Naomi, and it ends with Naomi. And Naomi, she starts out, she leaves full. She goes to wander in a foreign land. She comes back as just a remnant, and it looks like it's all over. And then God manages to revive her, like Ezekiel's bones, when you think everything is dead and gone. Through the miracle of the story, there is new life. Naomi is sort of a type. What does a woman represent in biblical typology, often? I don't want you to think every time you see a woman in the Bible, you say, church. But, you know, in these principal stories, it's sometimes smart to say, is there an application here? And I'm very comfortable with the idea that Naomi is something of a type of the Old Testament. She's a Jew. Ruth represents the New Testament. She's a Gentile. Much of the New Testament church, by the time of Paul, there were more Gentiles in the church than Jews. Started with Jews, but then it spread. And they're married together through a gift child. And the whole story is in the context of redemption. It's a miniature picture of the gospel story. But let's read on, and not to mention it happens in Bethlehem. I mean, that ought to, you know, trigger some recognition right there. And when Naomi saw that Ruth was determined to go with her, she stopped speaking to her. You know, when you're tempted sometime to give up, to turn away, to go back, Ruth closed the door to that temptation. She didn't leave it open. She said, "Don't even mention it again. I am going where you go. Your God is my God. Your people are my people. I'm going to brush up on my Hebrew." She probably was still working on it. She said, "Don't ask me again." Now, we don't know. Ruth, maybe she was an orphan. We don't know what her... It says nothing about her family. We don't know what she was leaving behind. But no doubt she had some family and some history in Moab. So she stopped speaking to her. Now, the two of them went on till they came to Bethlehem. And it happened when they came to Bethlehem that all the city was excited because of them. And the women said, "Is this Naomi?" They hadn't seen her in over a decade. So she said to them, "Do not call me Naomi," which means pleasantness. "Call me Mara." You know what the name of Jesus' mother was? This is Hebrew. Mary, which is a derivative of Mariam and Mara, which means bitter. Remember the waters in the wilderness that were bitter? That's why Simeon said to Mary, a sword will pierce your own soul, when she lost her son. So it's interesting that even that name appears. She says, "Don't call me pleasantness, but call me Mara, for the Almighty has dealt bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord has brought me home empty. Why do you call me Naomi, since the Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty has afflicted me?" Now, this story begins in the context of a famine. Have God's people in the Bible left the promised land because of famine before? Did that happen with Abraham? Did it happen with Isaac? Matter of fact, Isaac made the same mistake as his father. Abraham left during a famine, went to Egypt and said, "Sarah? Oh yeah, she's my sister." Later, there was a famine. Isaac went to dwell with the Philistines. He said, "Oh, Rebekah, that's my sister." It's his wife. And then during the time of Jacob, was there a famine? Did they leave and also go down to Egypt? And so there's something about salvation that's happening in these stories of the patriarchs that you also see repeated. It happens with Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and now it's happening in the family of David. These are all the line of the Messiah, and it's telling us that God saves us out of a famine. Now, in the last days, is there going to be another famine that's prophesied in the book of Amos? Not a famine for bread or a thirst for water, but of hearing the word of the Lord. That's Amos chapter 8. So she returned with Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her. In a small town like Bethlehem, everybody knew about it. It was a small community. Maybe 200 people in the town, they figure back then, with its size. In the country, from the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem at the beginning of the barley harvest. Okay, something else you should notice. That's a key word, is this is all happening in the context of a harvest. And isn't the gospel all about a harvest? Many of Jesus' parables. And Naomi had a kinsman of her husband, a man of great wealth, from the family of Elimelech, and his name was Boaz. Now, Boaz is a strong man. By the way, you know, there was one judge in Israel. We're in chapter 2 now. And if you read in Judges 12, verse 8, I bet if you don't look at this, not one in 50 here could probably name all the judges. But there was a judge in Israel named Isban. Some have said that was the same as Boaz, but I don't think so because it doesn't line up right geographically. But it says Isban of Bethlehem. He was the only judge from Bethlehem. But it is possible that Boaz was related to Isban because he was also a mighty man and a wealthy man, and he may have actually been a grandson of Isban. And something else about this guy, Isban, listen. After him, Isban of Bethlehem judged Israel. He had 30 sons, and he gave away 30 daughters in marriage. And he brought in 30 daughters from elsewhere for his sons. From elsewhere means from the other tribes, we hope. And he judged Israel 7 years. Now, is it just me, or those odd numbers? Bethlehem, 7 years, 30 sons, 30 daughters. Marriage. Now, isn't that kind of what's happening in the story of Ruth? Isn't it all about what will culminate with a marriage? I don't know what it means, but it means something. Take my word for it. I just thought that was very interesting. All right, back to the story of Ruth. So we're in chapter 2, and it's mentioning that there's this man named Boaz, a great man of wealth, a man of strength, a single man. Now, how he could be single, because he's a little bit older, evidently. He's got a lot of property, and he's leading out. And then he later says to Ruth, "The Lord bless you in that you've not gone after younger men." So what does that imply? It's possible that Boaz had been married and he lost his first wife and he's a widower now. The Bible doesn't say, so we don't know. But he's available. And he's got the means and he's got the family ties to redeem Naomi's family. Now, Naomi's lost everything. Her husband died, her sons have died, and the titles often were transferred through the men. Someone else has bought her property now, and the only way to get the property now is through what they call a kinsman redeemer. If she is going to get a piece of the promised land, they need a redeemer, right? If we're going to get a piece of the promised land, we need a redeemer. And our redeemer is also Boaz. Boaz means strong, and Boaz was the Lord of the harvest. Isn't Jesus called the Lord of the harvest in one of his parables? So Ruth the Moabitess said to Naomi, "Please let me go to the field and to glean heads of grain after him whose sight I might find favor." She said, "Go, my daughter." And she left, and she gleaned in the field after the reapers. Now, you know, in Bible times, they didn't have these harvesting machines. They did it with a scythe, where in these sweeping motions. Any of you ever see them do this in different parts of the world? We don't see it much in America anymore, but all of them had this big hook-shaped scythe on a pole, and they'd make this hip-swinging movement, and they'd go and they'd cut, and they were sharp. Those scythes were sharp because it cut through that grass, and then others would come behind, and they'd gather up the sheaves, they'd bind them up, and they'd carry them. They always dropped some. And according to the Hebrew law, the poor could come and pick up the sheaves. But instead of picking up armloads, you're picking up a strand here and a strand there, and it would add up and feed you. But it wasn't much. So Ruth is going to see if she can get something to eat. They're struggling for food because of this famine. She happened, I like the way the Lord says this, kind of tongue-in-cheek, she happened, by chance, to come to a part of the field belonging to Boaz, who was of the family of Elimelech. Now behold, Boaz came from Bethlehem, and he said to the reapers, "The Lord be with you." And they answered, "The Lord bless you." And Boaz said to his servant, who was in charge of the reapers, he's obviously got several servants, "Who is this young woman?" And the servant who was in charge of the members said, "It's the young Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from the country of Moab. She said, 'Please let me glean and gather after the reapers among the sheaves.' So she came, and she's continued from morning until now, though she rested a little in the house." They had a big shaded area where the workers would rest. Then Boaz, he goes over and he talks to Ruth. He says, "You listen, my daughter." That's another reason he may have been a little older. He's calling her daughter. "You listen, my daughter, will you not? Do not go and glean in another field. No, go from here, but stay here close to my young women." There were other women that were helping glean. "Let your eyes be on the field which they reap and go after them. Have I not commanded the young men not to touch you?" Now, you know, they actually had problems with that during harvest time. The women often went out and did a lot of the picking up of the grain after the men cut the grain. And even in the law of Moses, it says if a woman is out in the field and she's attacked, she's to cry out. And so there was a risk if you were not with other women or if you got off by yourself. And so he said, "Don't anyone bother her." Another thing is she's a foreigner. And so he's watching out for her. And he said, "You stay in my field. And I've commanded the young men not to touch you. And when you're thirsty, go to the house and drink from what the young men have drawn. There'll be water." And she fell on her face and bowed down to the ground and said to him, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me since I'm a foreigner?" And Boaz answered and said to her, "It has been fully reported to me all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband and how you have left your father and your mother in the land of your birth and have come to a people who you did not know before. The Lord repay you for your work. A full reward be given you by the Lord of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." You ever sing that song before? Under his wings? This is an example of where that comes from. So, isn't it interesting? Boaz knows everything. He's a type of crisis. This has been fully reported to me. I know all that's going on. And she said, "Let me find favor in your sight, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your maidservant, though I am not like one of your maidservants." Now Boaz said to her at mealtime, "Come here, eat of the bread, and dip your piece of bread in the vinegar." And that word there, vinegar, it was wine. It was a sour wine. Isn't it interesting? You got bread and wine at the meal. So, matter of fact, some of you might have a version that says wine in your Bibles. So she sat beside the reapers, and he passed parched grain to her, and she ate and was satisfied and kept some back. She's keeping it back, not because she wants to feed herself, but she's taking a doggy bag home because she's wanting to have some for Naomi. She's bringing raw barley home after harvesting, but now she's got some that's cooked and you can eat it. And when she arose to glean, Boaz commanded his young man, saying, "Let her glean even among the sheaves." By the way, that was Boaz's first date with Ruth. They had a little lunch together, you could say. "Let her glean even among the sheaves, and do not reproach her. And let some grain from the bundles fall purposely for her, and leave it that she might glean, and do not rebuke her." And, you know, instead of there being a strand or two of grain, straw, he said, "Go ahead and just drop some extra for her." And doesn't that tell you something about how the Lord wants to bless his people and just give us extra? See, when you're working in God's field, he gives you a little extra. Have you noticed that even when Jesus multiplied the bread and the wine, were there leftovers? Did it overflow? And so he loves. He's a generous man. If you girls that are single can find a guy like Boaz, you're doing okay. And so she comes home. She takes it up. She's got a whole ephah of barley, which is it's almost a bushel. And she takes this up, and she goes into the city to her mother-in-law. Mother lives in the town of Bethlehem. She's been out in the fields. And she brings what she's gleaned. And her mother-in-law said to her in verse 19, "Where have you gleaned today? And where did you work? Blessed be the one who took notice of you." She sees her lay out this whole bushel of grain. And she told her mother-in-law where she'd worked. She said, "The man's name of where I worked is Boaz." And Naomi yelps, and she says to her daughter-in-law, "Blessed be the Lord who has not forsaken his kindness to the living and the dead." And Naomi said to her, "The man is a relative of ours, one of our near kinsmen." And Ruth the Moabite said, "He said to me, 'You'll stay close by my young men until they have finished my harvest.'" And Naomi said to Ruth, her daughter-in-law, "It is good, my daughter, that you go out with his young women, and that people do not meet you in any other field. Stay in his field." So she stayed close by the young women of Boaz and gleaned until the end of the barley harvest and the wheat harvest, and she dwelt with her mother-in-law. Now, I was reading that, and that period of time between the barley harvest and the wheat harvest was about 7 weeks, and it's interesting, in the Jewish economy, that was falling directly between Passover and Pentecost. And isn't that where Christ's most important work was, where he died on the cross and poured out the Holy Spirit? And this is the same period of time that she's reaping between the barley harvest and the wheat harvest. So 7 weeks are going by, and every day Boaz sees her out in the field, and they're throwing out extra rain. She's gathering grain. And no, she's not just gathering grain so that she and Naomi can eat, but you could sell some of that grain. How many of you remember in 2 Kings chapter 4, there was a widow that couldn't pay a debt? So through a miracle, her oil is multiplied. And then what does she do with the oil? Elisha says, "Sell that, pay your debt, live on the rest, and of course you'll have some oil too." And so when this grain was falling, anyone ever ask you if you have any bread, but they weren't talking about food? What are they talking about? Money. And so this was money for them, because you would sell it to all the other people that maybe weren't farmers. And so this is representing a great windfall, you might say, for Ruth. And he's blessing her. He's letting extra fall. So then we jump over to chapter 3 of Ruth. She's not taking that long. Then Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, shall I not seek security for you that it may be well with you?" Now that word security that I've got in the New King James Version, I'm in chapter 3, verse 1. What does your Bible say? Rest. It's the word rest. So there's that rest. What does she want to find for her? What does she mean by rest? She said, "Look, you shouldn't be staying a widow and single and childless your whole life. It may be too late for me, but it's not too late for you. Let me see if I could do a little Jewish matchmaking and help you find a husband. Because words reached me that Boaz keeps looking over his shoulder to see what you're up to." That's not in the text, but women seem to know those things, don't they? Now Boaz, whose young women were with her, "Is he not your kinsman? In fact, he is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor." They were done with the barley harvest. Now they're separating the grain from the chaff. They had these big, flat stone areas where they'd kept the grain clean. It was a big paved area where they'd throw the grain up in the air after they rubbed it. And sometimes the women had these big winnowing fans. Any of you ever seen them do this? And it would blow the chaff away into one pile, and the grain would fall into a nice heap of just clean grain. Sometimes they'd winnow it two or three times to get all the chaff out of it. They needed a clean paved area where they did that. And so when they were harvesting, they worked from dawn till dusk, and they slept right there at the house. Another reason they did that, they had been having problems in the past with the Midianites and others stealing their grain. And raiders would come. And so all the harvesters, they slept around those piles of grain to make sure that it stayed where it was. It was their year's food. And so she says to her in verse 3, "Therefore, wash yourself and anoint yourself." Don't go out like a farm girl. "Clean yourself up, anoint yourself, put on your best garment, and go down to the threshing floor. But you're not going to thresh wheat. You're going to thresh for a husband." She doesn't say that. "Do not make yourself known to the man until he's finished eating and drinking. And it will be when he lies down that you shall notice." That means you mark the spot. "Stay on the outside there, and after they finish eating at the end of the day around sundown," they went to sleep with the sun back then because they didn't have artificial light. "Notice the spot where he is. Mark that spot. And you shall go in, uncover his feet, and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." And Naomi says, "All that you say to me, I will do." Now you notice through this whole thing, Ruth always obeys Naomi. The New Testament church only succeeds as it is rooted in the Old Testament. The New Testament is like that woman in chapter 12, clothed with the sun, but she's standing upon the moon, the Old Testament. The foundation for all the New Testament teachings, 10% of everything Jesus said, was based upon the Old Testament. So she listens. Now, don't get the wrong idea. When Naomi says to Ruth, "Mark the spot where he is. You don't want to accost him in public. You've got to find some time alone with him to explain what our situation is." After everyone goes to sleep and they kind of all scatter around the threshing floor and around the different heaps of wheat, he'll be in the threshing floor somewhere. When you see his form, mark that shadow. After everyone goes to sleep, creep in, uncover his feet, and that's what it meant to. It doesn't mean snuggle up next to him under the covers. She literally got down by his feet. Where did Mary Magdalene spend time? At Jesus' feet, about seven different times in the Bible. And that represents a form of submission. Where should the church be when it comes to relationship with Christ? Don't we serve? It's interesting, Mary kissed Jesus' feet and she served him. Judas kissed Jesus' face and he betrayed him. So she goes and she uncovers his feet. She is going to ask for an opportunity to serve. You know, any of you remember reading in the Bible when Abigail, the wife of Nabal, she stopped David from going and killing the family because of the terrible way that Nabal had treated them. Nabal then has a stroke and ultimately dies. David then proposes to Abigail. She comes. The way she responds to the proposal, she says, "I am willing to wash the feet of my Lord and his servants." Wow, never heard a proposal like that before. But this was the attitude back then. that they said, I'm coming because I want to serve. But really, that's what Christian marriage is, service of the husband and the wife to each other. So she takes this position of humility and she crawls in under his feet. Well, he's asleep. He doesn't know what's going on until later during the night. After verse 7, after Boaz had eaten and drunk, his heart was cheerful. He probably swapped a few stories with his friends. And then they went to lay down at the end of the heap of grain. And she came softly and uncovered his feet and lay down. Well, he's snoring at that point. Now it happened at midnight that the man was startled. It says he turned himself. You know, you roll over in your sleep to get more comfortable. And behold, there's a woman lying at his feet. And he says, "Who are you?" And she said, "I'm Ruth, your maidservant. Take your maidservant under your wing." There you have it again. "For you are a near kinsman." Now, it used to be that it was considered inappropriate for a woman to propose to a man. But this is a little more than a hint of a proposal. Because the only way that he can redeem them is through a marriage. And isn't the context of the redemption that Christ has for the church in a marriage? It's called the marriage supper of the Lamb. And when we go to heaven, I mean, Jesus said, "In my Father's house are many dwelling places." That's what a groom would do for his bride. He'd go build a dwelling place for his bride in his Father's house. He said, "I go to prepare a place for you." When he was done building the honeymoon chamber, he would come get his wife. "And if I prepare a place for you, I will come again." Would a groom forget his wife is what Jesus is saying. Parable of the 10 virgins. What's the context? It's a marriage. First miracle of Jesus was where? The wedding feast. So the whole story of Ruth is really about, will he redeem the family through marriage? So our relationship with Christ, Ruth is starting out, I know I'm running ahead of myself, Ruth is starting out as a stranger. The Moabites were considered enemies. As a matter of fact, it was said, "A Moabite shall not enter the house of the Lord for 10 generations. You remember that? Because the Moabites did not let the children of Israel enter into the promised land. They made them go the long way around. And so there was a curse pronounced. So they were separated. They could not come into the house of the Lord. But somehow an exception's being made. Now Ruth is going to be redeemed. And a Moabite lady is going to end up becoming a mother in Israel. It's all in the context of a wedding. And so he wakes up and she says, "For you are a near kinsman. You are our redeemer." The only way that Naomi can be redeemed and get her property back and we can have a place again is through your marrying me. So, talk about being breathless about what his response is going to be. I mean, here she's had to sneak in after months of working together in the harvest, and he's been looking at her and she's been looking at him. She's thinking, "How can I, a poor widow, he's the mightiest man in the land, ever dare to think?" I mean, it's like a fairy tale story about a prince marrying a poor girl is what's happening here. But she proposes to him. She finally gets him alone and says, "You are the only one who can redeem us, but you got to marry me." He knows what that means. And then he said to her, "Blessed are you of the Lord, my daughter, for you've shown more kindness at the end than at the beginning, in that you did not go after young men, whether rich or poor. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you request." She's asking him, and he says, "I do." But there's one place, there's a little loophole where things can go wrong. He said, "I will do for you all that you request, and the people of my town know that you are a virtuous woman." How is God's church described in Proverbs 12 and Proverbs 31? Who can find a virtuous woman? And by the way, I know ladies read Proverbs 31 and they despair. They think, "Man, I'll never be that." Don't feel bad. That's describing the perfect bride of Christ. But so even that language, a virtuous woman. "Now it is true, I am your near kinsman. However, there is a kinsman nearer than I. Stay this night, and in the morning it will be that if he will perform the duty of the near kinsman for you, good, let him do it. But if he does not want to perform the duty for you, then I will perform the duty." Now he's talking about marriage. I'm making it sound like a duty. As the Lord lives, lie down until morning. She says, go ahead, it's late night. Go get some rest. So she lay down at his feet until the morning. Did Jesus rise in the morning? And then she arose before anyone could recognize one another. A great while before it was day, Mary came to the tomb. And he said, do not let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. He said, don't say anything. Also, he said, bring the shawl that is on you and hold it. And when she held it, he measured 6 ephahs of barley. He filled the shawl with all that it would hold. This is winnowed barley. This is the actual grain. And laid it on her. He said, take this to your mother-in-law. Now, Boaz is going to be a good son-in-law, isn't he? He's already thinking about his mother-in-law. He said, don't go back empty. Bring a gift. And she went into the city. So when she came to her mother-in-law, she said, is that you, my daughter? It's still early and dark. She told her all that the man had done to her. And she said, these 6 ephahs, how many? It's like the days of creation. These 6 ephahs of barley he gave me. How many days a week did the manna fall? 6, right? These 6 ephahs of barley he gave me, for he said to me, do not go empty-handed to your mother-in-law. Then she said, sit still, my daughter. Just wait until you know how the matter will turn out. For the man will, I know, man, he's not going to rest, especially a man like Boaz. He's a man of action. He will not rest. There's that word again. He will not rest until he has concluded the matter this day. And she was right. Now we're in chapter 4. We're doing okay. Boaz went up to the gate and sat down there. And behold, the near kinsman of whom Boaz had spoke of came by. Doesn't ever say what his name was. And he said, come aside, my friends, sit down. They're relatives. Sit down here. So he came and he sat down. Now, where was business transacted typically? The gates of the city. Often judgments, contracts, things were done in the gate where there were witnesses. It was a public place. And matter of fact, even the judges would sit in the gate and often pronounce sentence. So he came and he sat down. And he took 10 men of the elders. There's that number 10. They're going to be witnesses to the event, like the 10 commandments. He took 10 men of the elders of the city. He said, sit down here. So they sat down. He said, we need to settle something. We need it done publicly because it's going to be a contract. And he said to the near kinsman, Naomi, who's come back from the country of Moab, sold the piece of land that belongs to our brother Elimelech. Someone else owns it. It needs to be redeemed. Has our world been kidnapped? This world that was made by the Lord has been kidnapped by someone else. And I thought to inform you, saying, buy back this land in the presence of the inhabitants and the elders of my people. If you'll redeem it, redeem it. But if you'll not redeem it, then tell me that I might know, for there's no one but you and I to redeem it. And I'm next after you. There was an order of priority, and he was second in line. This other relative was first in line. And I'm next after you. And the man was gracious. He says, I'll redeem it. Well, he thought that just meant pay the outstanding debt. He didn't know about the marriage part. So then Boaz says, now, one more little detail. On the day that you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you must also buy it from Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of the dead, to raise up the name of the dead on his inheritance. You need to marry her and raise up descendants. And that man, he then began to choke. And the near kinsman said, I can't redeem it for myself, lest I ruin my own inheritance. He's probably married. And he said, that's not going to go very well at home with my wife. You know, Boaz, you're still a bachelor. Why don't you take care of that? For he thought he was just going to get the property, but he was also going to get the wife with it. Jesus didn't just come to save the world. He came to save the bride. Right? God so loved the world. It's not just to get the field back. He wants his people. Now, this was the custom in former times in Israel concerning the redeeming and exchanging to confirm anything. One man took off his sandal and gave it to another. Try that at the bank. Let me know what happens. And this was an attestation in Israel. They would just, it was a token. It was saying that, you know, I am standing. It sort of symbolized, you walk on your shoes, means I am standing on my covenant. And so you take off one shoe. Therefore, the kinsman near to Boaz, he said, buy it for yourself. So he took off his sandal. And in other words, I'm never going to contest it. You've got my oath. that you have the right to his property and to this girl. And Boaz said to the elders and all the people, you are witnesses this day that I have bought all that was Elimelech's and all that was Chilion's and Malion's from the hand of Naomi. Moreover, Ruth the Moabitess, the wife of Malion, I have acquired as my wife, to raise up the name of the dead on his inheritance, that the name of the dead may not be cut off from among his brethren and from the gate of his place. You are witnesses this day. And all the people who were at the gate of the elders said, we are witnesses. The Lord make this woman who has come to your house like Rachel and Leah. And that was a blessing that was pronounced. Who built the house of Israel. And may you prosper in Ephrathah and be famous in Bethlehem. Did the people have any idea what they were saying and how much history would be affected by that transaction that took place that day? May your house be like the house of Perez, who Tamar bore to Judah. Now you notice what they're saying. Tamar was another Gentile that married a Jew. And it's interesting. Tamar really didn't have seed by Perez so much. Tamar had seed by Judah. Perez was her son, whom Tamar bore to Judah because of the offspring which the Lord will give you from this woman. Oh, there's more I should say about that. You remember what happened to Judah's first two sons? They didn't want to marry Tamar. They died because they did not want to raise up seed to their brother. And she ended up, Tamar tricked Judah into sleeping with her, and she ended up being an ancestor of Jesus. And the Lord will give you from this woman. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. They later had a formal wedding ceremony. And he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception. And she bore a son. And then the women said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a near kinsman, and may his name be famous in Israel. Wow, he was. And may he be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher in your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you is better to you than seven sons. Interesting numbers. He has borne him. You know, the Bible talks about the barren who has borne seven. By the way, do you know who Boaz's father was? Oh, I guess we're going to get to that in just a minute here. Then Naomi took the child and laid him in her bosom, and she became nurse to him. Also the neighbor women gave him a name. It wasn't the father. It's the neighbor women. They said, there is a son born to Naomi. And they called his name Obed. You know what Obed means? Servant. What are the prophecies about Jesus? Behold, my servant will be greatly exalted. He's a type of Christ. So here is a child. And in that child, Naomi, a type of the Old Testament, and Ruth, a type of the Gentiles in the New Testament, they're all brought together. The Old Testament church and the New Testament church all come together in Jesus. And his father, he is the father of Jesse, the father of David. Now this is the genealogy of Perez. Perez began Hezron. Hezron begat Ram. Ram begat Amminadab. Amminadab begat Naashon. Naashon begat Salmon. Now you know who Salmon probably was? Yeah, he's father of Boaz, but he's one of the two spies, probably, who went to Boaz that she received. And I can't prove that, but I believe it and I share it because I know you can't prove I'm wrong. Salmon begat Boaz. Boaz begat Obed. Obed begat Jesse. Jesse begat David. So the last word in the book of Ruth is David. It begins with a famine. It ends with a feast. It begins with people who have lost everybody and death. It ends with life. It starts out with widowhood and destitution, having no property, wandering like the children of Israel. It ends with rest and exalting. And this, the whole gospel story is in this book. You know, I just thought this is such a beautiful story, friends. You know, I think that it's interesting. Little did people know that the whole world's future would be altered by the little love story in that barley field outside of Bethlehem. The whole world's future was going to be altered by what happened there. Do you think they ever dreamed that? That through their descendants, through their marriage, and through their descendants, the king would come, David would come, who changed the world, as Solomon changed the world, and then Jesus ultimately changed the world, and he came through that. Which name do you think is found the most in the book? Ruth's name or Naomi's? Naomi. Ruth's name is found 12 times in the book. Interesting Bible number. Naomi's name is found 21 times. 3 times 7. And it ends by saying that Naomi took the baby and nursed the baby. That doesn't necessarily mean that she nursed him and fed him, but it means that she cared for the baby as any grandmother would. But here you just see the whole gospel story, I think, wrapped up in this book of Ruth. It is, to me, a supernatural book and a beautiful book. It tells about Jesus, and it tells about redemption. It tells about the great harvest. It tells about the marriage, and it tells about rest in those four quick chapters. Isn't that beautiful? All right, we're going to sing about redemption. That's our closing song, Redeemed, How I Love to Proclaim It, 338. Let's stand, please, as we sing.